This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Over the last several days, Lori Vallow Daybell's murder trial in Arizona has been underway. Jurors have watched something rarely seen in a courtroom. An accused killer acting as her own attorney while calmly questioning her grieving brother and the sister of her dead husband. There were no outbursts, no gasps from Lori, just flat and neutral. As family members laid out disturbing details, like Lori declaring her husband Charles had been overtaken by an evil spirit named Ned, or that she mailed Charles ashes via FedEx like it was an Amazon return. What stood out just as much was what Lori was saying was what she wasn't saying. Lori didn't challenge the talk of zombies or spiritual possession or casting out of demons. She just kind of let it all hang out there in the air, unanswered. So how do we begin to unpack the psychological meaning of her behavior? That's why we have Robin Drake here, retired FBI special agent and former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Robin, let's start with Lori. And I know you've had a chance to watch some of the trial this week, from her opening arguments to cross-examining witnesses that the state has brought up. Before we go into specific clips and pieces of this, what's been your overall reaction thus far?
I'm sorry, I'm chuckling, even I shouldn't be. I'm giving my very unscientific approach to some of these things sometimes, but just my emotional impact. Watching this, it's like you keep trying to watch it because I need to watch it because we're supposed to watch it. We got to pay attention to it. We got to do professional commentary on it. But literally, Tony, to me, it's like watching a sitcom that's been running one season too long. It's like you got to keep watching it just so you know how it ends. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, I'm over it. I you know, she's, the world is over her. I mean, you have your graphic in the background, Lori effing Daybell. Yeah, exactly. It's effing over. Just, you know, I'm so sick of listening to her pontificate with her crazy. So that's my only impression so far is she's what we expected, really. So,
she is. I mean,
so far
it's been an interesting week watching the opening arguments. I got to say this, and I'm not going to play back the opening arguments because I think we've already looked at them enough. But the bar was already low for her. I got to say, she's doing better than I expected. That she's doing great or good or anything, but it's like she's at a level of terrible, not at like the, oh my God, dumpster fire terrible, but at terrible. She's a step above dumpster fire.
You know, and I like that aspect of it too, Tony, is the fact that, I mean, I'm intellectually honest enough too. It's like, I think she's doing better than I would have done defending myself. I wouldn't even try it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I give her a plus up for at least high levels of narcissism thinking she could do it, because mm-hmm. she's actually doing better than we all anticipated, because I expected full-on crazy. You know, it's the same goofy shit. And whereas we have goofy and we have a lack of remorse and a lack of all this. And I did hear one defense attorney actually get on the news and say she's actually doing what a regular defense attorney would do, even though it's coming from her. So it sounds weird to hear her arguing or at least going over finer points on with family members and friends about killing her kids and conspiring, you know, mm-hmm. with her brother to kill her husband. I mean, it's just kind of weird.
Yeah, the narrative is so weird because she is the attorney. And I've been having a hard time trying to figure out what direction she's going, but I actually think she does have somewhat of a direction she's trying to go into. It doesn't, at the end of the day, argue her conspiracy, her role in the conspiracy, really, at all. Other than what it appears to be is she's trying to get out there. Did anyone ever see or hear her talking about killing Charles Vallow Daybell with Alex Cox? That seems to be what she keeps trying to drive forward and get to that point, come hell or high water, or whatever bizarro conversations she brings up in these cross-examinations, including like digging into a woman who went on a date with her husband. It always seems to kind of go back to there. And, you know, if you're going to try and give her a challenge, okay, here's what you need to get across, Lori, go for this. She seems to be attempting to do that. Will it work? Probably not, but...
Yeah, and you bring up a really fair point there, I think, Tony, and I do agree with it. She keeps challenging, did you ever see or hear me conspiring to do X, Y, and Z?
Yeah.
I think she's making a fair point, because I don't think – because she's so – her and Chad were just so delusional that – these just became assumed truths in their lives. They became assumed, you know, actions others would take, as they're trickling and leaking information to others about how things should play out. You know, with, in other words, they didn't say kill anyone, but dark spirits and should be eliminated. You know, see what I mean? Yeah. So I think she's in a world of rationalization and wordplay.
Mm-hmm.
So she's being very specific. Did you ever see or hear me say that? Because most likely, maybe she probably didn't. Just like she didn't say to Chad, we need to make all our money by killing people so we can actually have all their life insurance policies. Probably never said that directly, but all the actions and data points led to that path and down that road why she got convicted.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think she's making a fair point.
It's if you describe it in a different way, but everybody knows what the code language is. I mean, it's the same act at the end of the day, but what's weird about it is it's mixed with religion. So it's not necessarily that people are, or she's, if you believe that she believes this stuff, that she's trying to speak in code, she believes the code. She believes the code is the actual reality of it. And the reality is more so just the byproduct. And it's just, it happens to be that they're dead, so I get some money. But if they didn't turn into zombies, I would never have wanted to do that. It just happens that they had to die, so why not take the money? And that seems to be kind of the reasoning in her brain anyway.
Absolutely. And everyone else out there, and that's what I get the feeling of this, what she's doing in the trial is I don't think she's so much defending her innocence or guilt. She's, in her mind, informing the rest of the world how you all are idiots because you don't get it like I do.
Yeah, exactly. And in between that, getting really upset with someone that went on a date with Charles as she was cheating on him and conspiring to allegedly murder him. Let's take a look at this fun moment from court just the other day.
Would you have gone on a date with him if he would have said he was married?
If I would have realized how married he still was, maybe not.
He was married to.
But I just met for dinner. I wasn't sleeping with him or anything.
Do you go on dates with married men?
Not
naturally?
Argumentative. I'm going to also object under 611 for harassment.
All right. I'll sustain the objection.
Your Honor, do I not have a right to cross-examine this witness for what she has already testified to?
You can cross-examine her about what she's testified to.
So you did go on a date with a married man?
I went on a date with Charles.
But you did not know he was married?
I knew his divorce was not final.
His divorce was not started.
Okay.
Okay. So in your text messages, you asked Charles if he was a good kisser. Is that correct?
Maybe, sure.
Did he answer that text message?
I'm sure he did.
Again, 611, harassment.
I'll sustain the objection for relevance. And hearsay.
So are you trying to tell me and this jury that you went on one date with my husband and he told you all the details of our lives?
I'm telling you the truth, and that's what I know.
So you spent your whole date getting to know each other talking about me?
Don't flatter yourself. No, we did not spend the whole time talking about you.
Best line ever. I love that line.
That's going to be like at the end of the year, if we do like a clip show of like the top 10 moments in court, that's going to be in the top 10.
Drop
for this
the mic
year.
On that one.
Don't flatter yourself.
You know, I'm not a defense attorney, so I don't understand. But I don't know where she's going. Like I said, you know, my impression of this is that she's just talking for the sake of talking with past relationships that she feels that, you know, wronged her. So she's going to keep jabbing at them. I mean, what the hell? You know, So was he a good, you know, good kisser? Did you talk about me? I mean, it sounds like, you know, someone on the high school playground, a middle school playground that just got pissed off. I mean, I just don't get it.
It does. I mean, this witness, I don't know what direct. I think she was talking for the sake of talking on this one.
Yeah.
That's where it's been confusing because there's been some witnesses.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but get this too. She obviously prepared.
Yes.
You know, Lori's prepared. She knows exactly what she wants to say, but she's just saying it for the sake of saying it. There's no reason to say it. It's just wacky.
She's been sitting there in court. She's been sitting in that cell steaming on this one, I'm sure. Yes, going, I mean, that bitch, she went on a date with my husband. And
I've got to stop laughing because it doesn't
matter that she's about to kill him or like conspire to kill him allegedly. It's that he's a married man and divorce wasn't even started.
It's like, clearly, oh my God. It's a really bad sitcom. Well, not a daytime show. Day show.
It's like it's like a daytime sitcom that never works. Yeah. It's a soap opera. Yeah.
And the script was written so badly that, you know, they're able to get a time slot, but they're going to be canceled after three episodes.
Well, wasn't there, I never watched soaps, but like, I know my mom did and the people in my life that have. Wasn't there one like in the 90s that like, was like Young and the Restless or something. There was a possessed person in one of these.
Oh, really?
There was. It was like part of the plot line. Like every once in a while, I remember like a sick day from school, you're just kind of going through the channels and you're like, ooh, they're on the possessed like scene or something.
So, I was just dying that The Price is Right would pop up as I was flipping those channels.
10 a.m. 10 a.m. is when that came on. I'd watch that one religiously.
And you see how uninteresting Lori is? Look how we're digressing.
I know. I know. Exactly. Let's watch one more where more tension peaks in the courtroom with this witness in the trial.
That's how you met my brother, Adam?
Correct.
Do you know what perjury is?
Absolutely.
I object, Your Honor, to this question. Argumentative harassment.
Same. Argumentative.
How long was this conversation that you had with my brother at the pickleball tournament?
A couple of minutes, maybe less.
And how many times had you communicated with him before that?
Only that message on that dating app besides that.
One message, one time?
I don't remember. I think he messaged me back and it didn't continue.
So just the one day then? Maybe several messages in one day.
I might have sent him one other message, but it was just one interaction and there was nothing further.
And you did not schedule a date with him?
I did not.
Okay. Have you ever spoken to Brandon Boudreau?
Yes.
Okay, when?
He attends the same church that my daughter does, and he happened to be at their house briefly, and I didn't really speak to him. I just knew that that's who he was.
And how did you know who he was?
Because my daughter told me.
And who did she say he was?
Brandon Boudreau.
In relation to me?
She knows the story, and I know the story, so she just had to tell me that his name was Brandon Boudreau.
That he was married to my niece? Is that the information that you had?
I know that he was married to your niece, yes.
Okay. Just the association is all I was asking. And you did speak to him that time?
Well, I don't believe I spoke with him.
None of it makes any sense in that one, other than
it was like, why do I care? I mean, it just that's what I'm saying. It's just like, you know, you had the first season, which was her original trial, her and Chad, and there's some, you know, kind of horrendous, a lot of horrendous things with the children and the text messaging and the crazy that came out. You know, and they got you hooked on season one, and you're waiting for season two, and they got a new writer, man.
They lost him all in the strike.
This is just like, why am I watching this? Why is the government allowing their resources of money, time, and energy to be spent on? Now I get it. you know, the other things I said, I saw it too, and I totally understand it, you know, since her original convictions and appeal, you know, the likelihood is slim to none. But at the same time, you want to double down just to make sure that she will spend the rest of her life behind bars, because she is a nutter that killed her kids. And just in case the other one does get to appeal and get overturned in some weird remote way, you got to make sure that no crazy comes back out.
Yeah. Well, what's scary is she did an interview like right before this trial started. It's not the Keith Morrison Dateline one. It was, I believe, like with one of the local ones out there in Idaho. And they she was talking about, you know, life behind bars and what it's like. And she's like starting a little cult up back there, it sounds like.
Told you. We actually said that.
Yes, so we did.
I think it was you and I, you know, like right when she got convicted, it was like, what do you think life behind bars will be for her? And I said, it's actually going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
From her perspective, because she is charismatic. Mm-hmm. She spews a lot of crazy shit that she can rationalize, and she's going to attract people to her life in behind bars. And also there's going to be the nutters out there that want to, that I guarantee you she's getting fan mail, probably getting a couple of wacky guys that want to marry her. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's all happening because crazy attracts crazy, man.
She was talking about how she believes it's her mission in life, her mission from God now is to be behind bars and to, you know, bring this enlightenment. And I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but, you know, bring her version of the word of God to them and to help them and be there for these beautiful women who are on death row.
This is perfect for her. You
exactly.
Know why? She's got a captive audience.
Yep. She certainly does.
She can help people feel great about themselves, and she doesn't worry about her food or shelter anymore. That's why she's killing people off and taking their life insurance, because you know, she's a failed cosmetologist. Mm-hmm.
Now it's all about the commissary.
Yeah, she's meant to do this. She's put on this earth to be behind bars. There you go.
She didn't go super big into religion this week, which I was kind of surprised by, but I could tell she was getting a little triggered. And here's a moment of that. This is her talking with one of her former close friends, and this is her discussing a bit of religion in here, which, again, I think this is going to go deeper eventually, but here's our first inklings that she's getting a little triggered.
I've been accused of being out of the scope of the LDS religion when this is exactly in the scope of the LDS religion.
All right, I guess to the extent you're comparing yourself to these biblical figures, I'll allow it.
Comparing to biblical figures.
Was Elisha translated? Yes, I believe so.
Okay. But you don't know that John the Revelator was translated as well?
I can't remember.
And then the three Nephites in the Book of Mormon, they're translated as well?
No, there were three. You asked me their names. I don't remember their names.
I wasn't asking their names.
Bad Mormon. I said,
do you know who they are? As in, are you aware of them? I'm sorry. I'll be more specific. Are you aware of the three Nephites in the Book of Mormon?
Yes.
That they were translated?
Yes.
So is it fair to say that that isn't uncommon in the Christian belief system to believe in people being translated?
I don't know if I'm qualified to answer that question for all of Christianity.
Okay.
Okay.
Are you a Christian that believes in the Bible?
Yes.
Object, Your Honor, to relevance.
Who's the judge?
Patience of a saint.
Hurry up. He's just trying to figure it out, too.
Yes, I believe in the Bible, of course.
And Elijah in the Bible is translated, right?
Yes.
And you believe in that, right?
Yes.
And you're a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Is that correct?
Correct.
So that would not be out of the scope of what you believe. That's all I'm asking.
Correct.
Okay. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
Everybody's like, you got anything else? And with that, I mean, I think she's trying to get at, okay.
What she mean by translated? Translated like killed?
I don't know if translated means killed or translated means like she's a wiser human being.
Yeah.
I think it's like she's gotten the powers
And I apologize. I haven't heard that word used yet.
Yeah. I don't think translated means killed. I think it means that, like, she has superpowers now, basically. Like God has looked at her, and so she's comparing herself to biblical figures in the Mormon.
Elevated. Yes. There you go. Elevated.
Yes. So she's, like, up there in her mind. So she's trying to somehow contextualize, well, these people did it, so why would it be unreasonable if I'm that, too? I think that's where she's going with it.
That makes sense now. Yeah. But why?
Sure, it'll make a ton of sense to the jury. Like, well, she's translated. Well, that explains everything. She knows more than we do. Clearly, she can go kill people. Let's let her out to a playground. It's like, what the hell?
Hey, and everyone's safe as long as you don't have a life insurance policy.
Exactly. And that's part of it. It's like, are you, you know, do you believe what I believe, kind of? And do you have life insurance? And if you do, well, guess what? You're going to be on her hit list. So there is some of the religion beginning to be sprinkled in here. She seems a little triggered by it. I'm going to guess she's going to go deeper on this. Do you think?
Yeah, so, and you make a fair point of that too. And I think with the cabal of people around her in prison, and then she's obviously getting counsel and advice and guidance from people of knowledge. I mean, there's no way she learned how to talk like this on her own, you know? And so I think that she's probably advised to stay completely away from religion because she sounds like a nutter. Mm-hmm. Or they're not say that she sounds like a nutter. They're going to say that the uninformed, the unenlightened, and the jury are not going to understand what you're saying. So in order for your message to come across, you need to avoid it. But like you said, when she gets triggered and emotionally hijacked, which will happen under cross for on her, when you get emotionally hijacked, you go to your core beliefs, you go to core of who you are. I think it's going to come out then. And that I think that's going to be the episodes of this season that I think are going to be the most interesting. Because when she is like, because what's happening now? Let's just analyze this behaviorally. Mm-hmm. What's happening now? She's in control.
Yeah.
She's in control of what she's presenting. She's in control of her words. She's in control of the questions. Some of them are being disputed, you know, or pushed back on with objections. But in general, she prepared. She's the center of attention. So she's completely in her own comfort zone when she is it. Mm-hmm. And she's asking exactly what she wants of who she wants. It's no sense to anyone else because she's in control. I think when she loses control, you're going to see a different side of her come out.
Yeah, I did too. And I don't think she's going to be able to hold anything back. Her brother, Adam Cox, took the stand as well. He was not, I believe, in the first trial. This is the same brother. I actually know him. I worked with him in radio in Wichita years ago. He's been on this show as well. And him and the uncle actually have a podcast, the Silver Linings podcast. And they talk about a lot of the stuff that's been going on in this case from their personal perspective. This is the first time I've talked to him about this case, but this is the first time I think a lot of us have learned just how involved he was in the moments leading up to Charles' death. And in no way do I think he has anything to do with it, but I think he was just as blindsided. It's interesting to hear Lori try and make a connection with him over enchiladas in court. Let's take a look.
I thought so too.
Mr. Cox, how long has it been since we've seen each other in person?
Don't know.
When was the last time you saw me?
I don't recall.
So, has it been a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, something 6 years, like 7 years, 8 years?
Something.
Okay. So, you have no idea?
Nope.
You have no idea when the last time you saw me in person?
I don't know the year or how many years it's been.
Okay, so did you see me at Colby's wedding in January 2018?
No, I was not there.
You didn't come to Colby's wedding?
No, I did not.
So did you see me sometime that year at my house?
Possibly.
Where Colby got married? That house.
I did see you at that house, yes.
At least one time?
Yes.
So possibly in 2018?
Yes.
And when was the last time we had any communications?
The last time I remember our communications was you and I were speaking in the kitchen when the family was over.
Okay, so you think that was that time in 2018?
I think so.
Okay. And were we eating my green chili chicken enchilada?
Do not remember that.
You do not remember that?
Nope.
Is that what I made every time we had a family get together, which was like 10 times a year?
I don't remember that.
Okay. And when was the last time that we had a phone call or text message?
I have no idea.
Were we eating my green chili chicken enchiladas?
So I think an important thing for people that are bored listening to her, like mm-hmm. me,
yeah,
to really take example of here is what you're witnessing is psychopathy in action.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't get triggered, you know, not just in this interaction with her brother, but anyone, like we were saying, she has such a neutral aspect to herself or an effect to herself because she's not emotionally connected to anyone. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what she's saying, she's able to maintain cognitive pragmatic approach to her questions she's trying to get across. But that's why she's not responding. That's why she's not seeing an emotional response to anything, because except she'll get angry maybe. It's all about grandiosity, because that's all what, again, I'm not a licensed clinician. I haven't seen any results of a psychopathy test on her or anything like that. But this is what psychopathy looks like. Zero effect, you know, with interacting with human beings. That's why she's so boring. Mm-hmm. There's nothing there. There's zero there.
A lot of times you think of psychopathy and it's this crazy, raging person. No, it's most of the time it's this.
So what happens is what psychopaths will do is they adapt the environment. So we're seeing this really, really good. So I'm kind of having some pops in my mind on this one. So what psychopaths do very, very, very well, and not psychopaths that kill people, but just psychopathy in general. It's a continuum, mm-hmm. From low end to high end, is they have the ability to morph themselves into their environment so they can be predators in that environment very, very well. That's what it's a natural part of who they are. They don't even think about it. And so they become stalkers. They become manipulators of the entire environment. That's why I said I thought she's going to do very well in prison because she's going to learn that environment, just like I think Alec Murdoch's going to do very well in prison.
Yeah.
They manipulate their entire environments for their self-gain. Mm-hmm. And so what we're seeing here is we're seeing her as a defense attorney in the courtroom morphing herself into what it needs to be as a defense attorney.
Be curious if she had more reps in being a defense attorney, just a few more trials under her belt. How, like, would she improve? Would she do better at the of?
I think she would.
For being her first round here.
You know, it depends on the amount of she lacks any humility whatsoever, because you need humility to learn. But if she's thinking in terms of. Boy, that's a really good question, because no humility, can't learn, you know. But at the same time, though, she's going to get – it would depend on how if the responses she's getting are serving her predatory needs.
Yeah.
If they were, which, again, it's hard to understand what exactly her gain is that she's looking for. So in her mind, if she's gaining what she wanted to gain from the interaction, then she's not going to improve. But if she wasn't, then she's going to reflect and think about how she can manipulate that world a little bit better, and then she would improve. So it really depends on what her context of success is in this situation.
Translated being, she was just talking about that. Here is Adam. This, I believe, is with the prosecution. Asking him about what she was talking about when she talked about being a translated being or becoming a translated being to Adam. Let's take a look.
Lori told me that she was in the process of translating from a mortal human being to an immortal human being, a celestial state.
That's something that the LDS religion supports?
I haven't heard of it in that it's happened here on Earth yet.
Did you ever hear her talking about being married to someone that is relevant in your religion?
Yes, I have heard that.
Did she tell that to you?
I don't know. I can't recall her telling me that, but I remember other people telling me that.
Okay. Was there anything else that you recall her telling you that she believed that seemed outside the LDS religion?
Yes. There was a time where she told me that she had more priesthood authority than the priesthood.
And why, can you explain for us what that means, why that was significant to you?
In our religion, the men hold the priesthood, And she said that she's in a state where she's above that. Okay. I didn't quite understand it, but very strange.
Did you confront her about these beliefs?
Confront her? No.
Did you discuss with her about these beliefs?
I just let her say what she wanted to say.
Was there ever a conversation where, when she was telling you these things, where she asked if you thought she was crazy?
Yes.
How did you respond to that?
I said, I don't know if you're crazy, but what you're telling me is not true.
So, again, this is kind of where, and I'm not trying to insult LDS, but you walk people up to the line of human beings being something that they're not, and then they take it a little bit further and go, well, why can't I be these magical people? It's not surprising when they walk off the cliff, and there's a lot of them that seem to walk off the cliff. Lori just happened to go, like, way off the cliff.
Yeah, when you deal with mental health issues, challenges, or deviant behavior, and they're able to grab onto a system that's already pre-established and then take it and manipulate it for their own needs, mm-hmm. that's what happens when you deal with LDS or any religion, really. It just happens to be the flavor of the day, you know, in the last bunch of years that LDS has been the brunt of the experiment for these people.
Yeah, they got a problem with extreme thinking and honing it in. Let's do one more. This is Kay Woodcock. As we know, the Kay and Larry, they were the ones who initially had JJ, and it was the grandchild, and Lori ended up adopting JJ, and we know what happened after that. She was one of the grandparents that was begging police to look into this. Where are the grandkids? And after many, 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 many weeks, and even seeing Lori and believing her excuses, they obviously found out they were dead, and then they arrested them. Let's take a look at Kay Woodcock kind of talking about the relationship problems that Charles was talking about having at that time with Lori.
Yes, I did. In 2019, again, without going into what Charles said, did you ever believe that Charles was concerned for his safety?
Charles was absolutely concerned for his safety. Lori had sent me a text, I think it was on a Thursday, that she and Charles were fighting because of some stuff she came up with, and that she and JJ and Tylee were at a hotel. Well, I guess Tylee was, I'm not sure. And because she didn't want to have any fighting, so they went to a hotel, and I came out. I knew Charles the next day. That's when she sent it to me, and then I just really didn't. I didn't call Charles. I knew he'd call me, and he sure enough did, and he was a mess, and so I flew out the next day out here to help him with JJ and just to come and talk to him and see what was going on. He was alone, and Lori's family turned their backs on him and JJ. Okay.
Let's just kind of break it all down.
All right.
You got a lot that you remember. So you said that you got a text from Lori indicating that she and JJ and Tylee were at a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said that Charles then called you maybe the next day?
Yeah.
And you came out here to Arizona?
Yes.
When you came out here to Arizona, did you become aware at that point that there was a big problem now with their relationship?
There was a huge problem now with their relationship.
And during this time when you had come out here, do you remember approximately when that was?
It's like the 1st of February of 2019, or the 2nd. It was right in there.
when you came out here, did you then speak with Charles about his concerns for his safety? Just yes or no.
About his what?
His concerns for his safety.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
He also ever talking about Lori not wanting to have JJ or Tylee or him in her life anymore. So that doesn't play very well for her, where she's actively talking about not wanting her kids or her ex-husband in her world right after they all die.
Yeah, what's interesting, it's we all pick up on different things when we watch these things. What's interesting to me is that this happened in 2019. She remembered the first thing being a Thursday. And she remembers it was either the 1st or the 2nd of February, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, what did you do on the 1st or 2nd of February in 2019? What did you do in February of 2019?
Well, I can give you every single day. On the first day, I started it at a Burger King. No, but keep in mind, I mean, she's been living this story for the last however many years now. So she has some of those dates down. But yes, like right off the bat, no idea, you know?
Right. And my point here being that we don't remember average days. Our brains don't work that way. We remember days that are really, really challenging and bad, or we remember really, really awesome days. And so the fact that this was such an emotional impact on her, what was going on, you know, that she travels down there, that there's major things going on in the marriage, and she made the trip to do that and remembers the dates very specifically, indicates, you know, granted, I know it's testimony and she's doing it and everything, but at the same time, though, behaviorally, it's very congruent with where is a major problem. This is not made up in her life.
No, not at all. And there you go. That's where we're at this moment in time of this recording and the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. It's going to be picking up again. And of course, we're going to keep covering it until its end. It's still in the hands of the state, and they are going to continue to bring up their witnesses. It's going to get very interesting once it's over to the defense to see who Lori brings in. I wonder if Lori's going to bring anyone in that's going to like benefit her in any sort of way, or if she's going to squander all of that too without even realizing it.
She will bring in who she thinks will benefit her. So what I said earlier, I think what we're really witnessing here is, again, non-clinical assessment, where we're seeing psychopathy in action.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.